This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Privacy on the Internet is something that many of us take for granted until we notice its absence. A recently discovered bug called Heartbleed may have compromised data on more than two-thirds of the secure sites on the Internet. Looks like that bug has been around for a couple of years, but it wasn't discovered until last week. And it's hard to measure just how much data has been leaked. Jeremy Bowers is here. He's a news applications developer for NPR. Hello, Jeremy.
Hey, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing pretty well, but tell me about Heartbleed. Now, what is it exactly?
Well, Heartbleed is an error that, a bug, really, that struck a piece of software that most people don't really use every day. It's called OpenSSL, and it's sort of the foundation behind why encrypted websites, like your bank or your email, the ones that have the little lock in the top corner when you're using them in your web browser, the way that they keep your information safe and secure from other people on the Internet. And the way that this bug works is it prevents it normally prevents people from looking at things like your passwords and your banking information. Except right now, that's not what's happening at all.
And that encryption is when, I mean, I type something in, it looks normal to me, but when it gets sent, it's gobbledygook. It gets to the other end, it gets turned back into something sensible. Is that roughly what happens along the way?
That's exactly right.
And so that's nice, except then this little bug allowed what had been gobbledygook to turn into precisely what I typed and be visible to somebody in between. Have I got that part right?
You do. And it's often called a man-in-the-middle attack. When security researchers talk about this, you know, they talk about how to keep your information safe when we're crossing across the whole of the Internet, you know, in which there are tons of computers that you don't control, but you'd still like to be able to get to something like your bank or your email. And so it's really important that the important information that you're transferring is gibberish in between you and the people you want to see it.
All right. And so this has been going on for 2 years. So how was it discovered?
Well, the vulnerability was entered into the code for the first time in March of 2012, but it wasn't discovered until 2 days ago. A pair of research teams, one with an internet security company and one team at Google, discovered that there was a problem in OpenSSL, and both of them sort of indicated that it could be used to do to really take the keys that these internet companies are using to secure people's information. And it was just discovered during a routine reading of the code and, you know, looking for exploits.
Now, we say just discovered recently, but we don't know if there's some bad guys out there who have figured this out long before, right?
That's true, and that's really one of the reasons why this is such a devastating attack, is that it's really hard for any particular user or even any particular website to know whether or not someone has used this against them. And any time between March of 2012 and now, the traffic on the Internet that maybe had been going to Yahoo, for example, or to a mom-and-pop shopping cart on the Internet could have been held by an attacker, and then they could use at any point the keys that they had gotten from that internet company to go back and look over the traffic and decrypt stuff.
Go ahead and finish your thought, please.
I was going to say, it's more than just a theoretical attack, too. On Twitter yesterday, a handful of security researchers walked downstairs to an open Wi-Fi network and ran some software against people in that open Wi-Fi network that were trying to connect to Yahoo to get to their email, and were able to get something like 20 usernames and passwords in about 30 minutes.
Yeah, so am I more vulnerable when I'm in an open space, my favorite cafe, an airport, that kind of thing, than I am at home, or does it matter?
No, that's exactly right. When you're at your house, the people between you and your bank or you and your email provider are large internet companies, your AT&Ts, Comcast, et cetera. And so you're slightly less at risk there. This is really more a risk when you're on a public wireless network, like at a hotel or at a coffee shop, when you're sharing an internet connection with a group of people who you don't necessarily know or trust.
So for those guys, the big internet providers, the NSA is my problem. But that's for another conversation. Okay,
Indeed.
So Heartbleed's out there. Interesting question. So how did it get its name?
It got its name because it's the exploit happens to be in a part of the OpenSSL standard that allows for server administrators to check to make sure that the software is still running. It's called a heartbeat. And because it bleeds information out slowly to an attacker 64 kilobits at a time, it naturally makes sense that you'd call this thing Heartbleed.
So how dangerous is it that we are sitting here talking about this on the radio now, and somebody who could figure out how to exploit this now knows what to do? Go ahead. Yeah.
The good news is most of these vulnerabilities to open source software are posted as soon as they possibly can, because the maintainers of the software want to fix the vulnerability as quickly as they possibly can. Now, you know, most internet companies by now have already entered a fix, you know, for their own software, and they've, you know, created new keys and certificates so that you're probably protected from this point going forward. The part that's the most dangerous is the previous 2 years and the possibility that at any point, you know, since March of 2012, you know, your logins to various places could have been compromised by someone if you were on, say, a public Wi-Fi network.
And as you pointed out, that could have been collected and stored and not used yet, so I may not know for a while whether that's been compromised, which raises the question, what should I do?
Exactly. So again, one of the reasons why this is so devastating is that there's not a whole lot of behavior that individual people can engage in, you know, to solve this particular thing. There are, however, pretty good internet hygiene things that you should be doing anyway. You know, changing your password every few months, you know, being a little bit distrustful of public wireless networks, etc. Those things would help you out even in this case.
Now, when you say a little bit distrustful, I mean, what, you either use it or you don't. Is there anything you could do on a public wireless network that would make you more safe?
Sure. If you happen to work for a company that has a virtual private network or a VPN, and you were able to connect to your company that way, that, as far as we know, is still fairly safe. And even as far as today, you know, you could connect to Gmail or you could connect to Amazon, like internet shopping providers like this, without much worry. But, you know, generally speaking, if you're on a network that you don't trust, it would be best to limit your behavior to things that you wouldn't mind people being able to find out, you know, your basic web browsing and et cetera.
Now, since this has been publicized, you know, the big firms have been, anybody who's got online secure servers has been asked to go check those servers and look and try to fix things, right? So how do I know if the service I'm interested in, if Yahoo or Gmail or any of those, or my bank for that matter, has figured this out and fixed it?
You know, there are a handful of services on the web, like individual sites that will let you do this. Actually, if you go to heartbleed.com right now, you can check out and see there's a handful of ways there that you can check sites. But it's actually just really difficult, even for individual companies, to know if they've been affected. And it's not something that's necessarily very public-facing. So it's really difficult to determine, you know, if a company has been affected and how recently it's been since they've changed things.
So you won't know necessarily if they've made the change, although it would seem to me to be in their best interest to kind of let people know, huh? Is that happening?
You know, a few sort of internet forward companies, I got some notes from a handful of internet forward companies like fastmail.fm let me know yesterday that they had updated their site. But, you know, as far as some of the other larger providers, like a lot of those folks had their things fixed, you know, as quickly as possible. Site that did not was Yahoo, which until about 2:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time yesterday, you know, was still vulnerable. And so, you know, Yahoo, you know, said publicly that they were working on getting all of their systems that they could patched up and revoking as many keys as they could.
You know, well, you talked about good internet hygiene for us as individuals: change your password frequently, be leery of public Wi-Fi spaces. What about this security in general? I mean, you talked about this kind of random reading of the code, going over it as a kind of security measure 2 years after it was written. How often do folks go over these OpenSSL protocols to figure out if it's really safe?
You know, this is sort of the crux of the problem, is that, you know, with free and open source software, the source is available for anyone to look at. But there's not necessarily anyone whose job it is every day to comb over it and look for vulnerabilities. Now, the good news is, you know, there are web security companies, you know, who make a practice of this. But in the Heartbleed bug in particular was in a sort of bizarre area of the code, and the way that the exploit worked was such that it was a little more difficult to determine, you know, upon just looking at the code, whether or not it was actually exploitable. It just turns out that it was.
You made reference to open source, and that might, in some people's minds, be kind of the problem. Why is it open source? So kind of explain what that means and why it's valuable for this kind of software, in fact, to be open source, right?
Sure. Well, one of the great things Open source generally means that the source code, the recipe, the instructions behind the software is visible to anyone who wants to see it. And more than just visible, it's available for someone to create their own possibly derivative version of it. The sort of power in open source is that because it's visible, there's no hiding any errors or bugs that you might have. They're all immediately understandable by someone if they would like to look at it. And so what happens is that over time, open source software tends to be, you know, very secure because a lot of the bugs are weeded out early on in the process. And this is exactly the case with OpenSSL, which, you know, has been an open source software project since the 90s. It's been around for a very long time. And as a result, most of the really bad things about it have already been found. This just happens to be one that got through. And I would like to point out that, you know, this bug was found and then almost immediately fixed. And if it weren't for how difficult the patch is to apply, not just installing new software, you have to also revoke and create new keys in case someone has stolen them. This wouldn't be nearly such a problem.
Yeah, and but it was the open source nature of it that allowed it to happen at all, or at least facilitated that.
Right. And it also facilitated the people who found the, you know, who found the exploit so that we could be patched and new versions of the software could be shipped out. Right. It would be much more difficult to do this with a piece of software that was closed source, for example, because we would never get to see it.
Jeremy, thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you.
Jeremy Bowers is a news applications developer for NPR. On the state of things just ahead, we will talk with a man who will witness the execution of his father's killer. On the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, the broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.